This is Audible.
Recorded Books presents an unabridged recording of Romeette and Julio by Sharon M. Draper, narrated by C.C. Aisha Johnson.
Chapter 1. Fear. The water thundered into her ears, forced itself down her throat, and burned its way into her nose, her lungs, her brain. This water was fierce and deadly. No cool, gentle waves, but hot, choking, liquid flames sucking the breath of life from her. She struggled, searching for air, for land, for something to hold on to. But there was only the water pulling her into its depths. She couldn't breathe. She couldn't swim. She couldn't even scream. The water filled her, seared her thoughts, and she drifted slowly into unconsciousness. The fire cooled, the terror ebbed, and the dark shadow of death embraced her. She drifted then, in a haze of colors and swirls and black, frightening void. Voices? Could she hear voices? One voice. Maybe it was a song. No, all was silence, thick, enveloping quiet that led to despair. No reason to care, to breathe, to live. So easy to let the silence swallow her. That voice, it pierced the darkness. It was calling her name, grabbing her thoughts, and making her remember the fear, the pain, the cold, clammy water. The water! She gasped, and the water grabbed her once more, viciously dragging her to its depths. But that voice, a man's voice, it floated down to where she lay, cradled in the arms of the victorious water. The voice called her one last time. Suddenly Romeo sat up in her bed. Her nightgown was damp and clinging to her body. She was sweaty and disoriented. Her heart, still pounding from the fear of almost drowning, made her breathing jagged and tight in the darkness. She turned on her light, looked around her pale blue bedroom, and started to relax. She got up quietly, changed her nightgown, then opened her bedroom window. The night air was cool and soft. Peace and silence ruled the street. No cars, no movement. Not even a barking dog. Slowly, Romeette began to breathe more evenly. She took a deep breath of the night. This was the third night in a row that she had been awakened by a dream of drowning, but she had been dreaming various versions of this dream for several months. She could find no reason for such a dream. True, she couldn't swim, but she wasn't taking swimming at school, and she purposely made her life tiptoe far around anything having to do with more water than a bathtub. So why the terror dream? She thought again. Why? And who did that voice belong to? She could hear it still, and it made her tremble, not with fear, but with excitement. It was not a voice she had heard before. She was sure of that. It was 3 a.m. Romeette knew she couldn't get back to sleep, so she decided to write in her journal. Writing soothed her, relaxed her, and tonight, she thought, was one of those nights that she needed to really chill. This was my favorite Christmas present, thought Romeette as she stroked the smooth leather cover of her new journal. She sat cross-legged on her bed with a blanket around her shoulders, relaxed a bit, breathed deeply, and opened the journal slowly. She carefully wrote her name on the soft, cream-colored front page. She blew on it, gently, to make sure it would not smear. Then, with great anticipation, opened to the first page. She liked starting a fresh journal. It was full of possibilities and unanswered questions, of days yet to come and events yet to happen. She decided to start by describing who she was. Maybe somehow she'd find an answer to the terrible dreams. Chapter 2. Romeyette's Journal. My name is Romeyette Renee Capel. I am brown, like the earth, tall and slim, like a poplar tree, and outspoken, like the wind on a stormy day. I like mornings, because of all the possibilities, and rainbows when I can find them. I am 16 years old, and I'll be driving by the end of the year. I like chili, macadamia nut cookies, and environmentally safe products. I believe recycling is essential for the future of this planet, so I never throw anything away. In my room, I have collections of buttons, pop tops, foil, and safety pins. I like to talk on the phone in the dark because it adds mystery and conserves energy. I hate picky people, watermelon and chocolate. I hate gangs, violence, and movies with too much sex and cussing. There are gangs in our school now, and it's a little scary because they want to control with threats and punches, the actions and thinking of kids, and I can't be bothered with that. So they don't like me much. That's fine with me. I don't need any more complications in my life. It's complicated enough trying to juggle geometry, boys, and learning to drive. I'm not afraid of much. Lots of girls see spiders and snakes and scream. I think snakes are sleek and sexy. Not that I'd want to marry one or anything. But I like snakes because they're smooth and cool, and spiders because they create art out of their own bodies. That's awesome. Most spiders don't bite, and if I see one, I go around it rather than step on it. Life is rough enough for a spider without looking out for girls with big shoes. And I do love big shoes. The bigger, the better. 3-inch heels and soles. 4 inches. 5. My mother said she wore shoes just like those when she was my age. I find that hard to believe. The only other things I'm afraid of are being abandoned. Thunderstorms and water. I'm terrified of water. I took swimming when I was little like everyone else, but I never learned. That's not exactly true. I learned how to swim. I just never got the nerve to let go. I know how to do rhythmic breathing, proper arm strokes, the flutter kick, all of that. But I just can't get away from the side of the pool. When I'm in the middle with nothing to hold on to, I panic. There's just nothing solid, nothing to grasp. The water slips through my hands, and I flounder. Then I start to sink. Then I scream. Then, of course, I get embarrassed. So I go to the pool, but I stay on the side, or splash with the little kids in the shallow end, so their parents can go swim in the deep water. Even walking by the deep end makes me feel ill. But I've never fallen in. Never had a near-drowning incident. Never even slipped in the bathtub. Which is why that dream freaks me out. I'm going to have to ask my dad. He would tell me what to do without getting too worried about it. My daddy, Cornell Capel, is a television newscaster. He's good-looking and popular, and his picture is on billboards all over the city. I like that. He gets to interview all the stars and dignitaries that come to town. I got to meet Michael Jackson and Michael Jordan last year because of my dad's job. His show comes on every night at 6 o'clock with this really goofy lady named Nanette Norris. She's pretty, but she can't read very well and keeps mispronouncing words and making stupid mistakes on the air. She once spent the whole show talking about the gorillas in some war in Europe. My dad just smiled and explained to the listening audience that the gorilla, not gorilla, warfare was making the war so intense. My daddy's folks come from New Orleans, and we visit every summer with my grandmama Essie and my grandpapa Rudolph. Essie makes the best red beans and rice this side of the Mississippi River. And Rudolph tells me tall tales of ghosts and voodoo and stuff my daddy did when he was little. I bet Grandpapa Rudolph would know why I'm having scary dreams about drowning. Grandmama would say it was something I ate or growing pains, but Grandpapa would light a candle and whisper a tale of a drowned sailor woman, and I wouldn't sleep for a week. He'd laugh about it later, but then he'd wink at me, and I never could be sure when he was joking or when he really believed what he said. My mother's name is Lady. I think black folk have the most creative names for their children. We don't bother with ordinary names like Sandy and Mary. We like flamboyant names like LaChandra and La Marietta, or Kenesha or Apollonia. Each name is distinct and descriptive. Anyway, my mama, Lady Brianna Capel, is from Cincinnati, where I grew up. Her parents are strict, church-going, hymn-singing college teachers who taught me to love music and reading and God. They named their only daughter Lady because that is what they expected her to grow up to be. Not a woman, but a lady. And she is. She is 6 feet tall, with very short dark hair, dark skin, and a figure better than mine, and I'm 16 and supposedly at the prime of my life. She was a model when she was younger. She walks like an African queen. Grandpa told me that we are direct descendants of African kings, and when I see my mama walk, I believe him. She never frowns, never yells, and never loses her cool like I do all the time. Once we were shopping and the sales lady started to wait on these teenagers who had come in at least 20 minutes after us. Mama didn't raise a fuss. She said quietly, with that powerful, musical voice of hers, "Excuse me, madam, but the reports of my invisibility have been greatly exaggerated. I'm sure you never intended to overlook my 6-foot body and $100 worth of merchandise I am holding in my hand." The lady mumbled apologies. Mama smiled sweetly, and we walked out of there like royalty. My mother owns a boutique downtown. She sells African artifacts and cloth and imported items from all over the world. She also carries prints from black artists and lots of books for children and adults by black writers. Anybody who wants a unique outfit or some authentic African artwork, they know to come to Lady Brianna's boutique. I work there 3 days a week after school, and most Saturdays. It's not like a job to me because I love being there. I've read all the latest books, and I've got some really sharp outfits that my friends all admire. People from all over the world come to Mama's shop. Her shop is right between two large hotels, so we love tourists. A couple of times we even had visiting kings and presidents of African countries come in. She, the queenly person that she is, was simply charming to them. They appreciated her style and bought lots of stuff. I like being connected to royalty. I'm tall, like my mom, but not tall enough to have that queenly walk. She says it will come later, but I don't know. I may be doomed to walk like a jock all my life. I tried modeling for a while, but I felt stupid grinning when I wasn't happy and walking when I'd rather be sitting down. Last year I played basketball on a team of girls from my neighborhood. We could beat most of the boys we know, but the boys would never admit it. I don't have a boyfriend, and I don't want one. Boys are smelly, noisy, and confusing. They call you and tell you they like you, then they don't call back. They like to act macho and don't like a girl who is smarter or tougher than they are. I'd like to find a guy who could talk to me about more than the latest singing group or the scores of last night's game. I want a boy who wonders about life on other planets, or if there ever was a continent called Atlantis. I'd like to be able to talk to him about adopting children, or the World Wide Web, or whether there's a heaven and a hell. I want a boy I could tell my dreams to, and he wouldn't laugh. He'd understand my fear. I want a boy who would go see a play or a ballet, not just a hockey game or a car show. I believe a relationship should be well-balanced. But boys who are smart, good-looking thinkers, if they go to my school, they're hiding from me. I don't think I look too bad, but nobody has seemed to notice yet. I have soft brown skin, dark brown hair, and light brown eyes like my dad. My favorite color is orange, because I think I look good in it. I've got a big smile and even white teeth that my dad paid a whole lot of money for when I got my braces at 12. I like school and make good grades most of the time. I have a computer, which really helps my homework look good, and I have friends who I talk to regularly on the internet. My parents love me. My friends think I'm okay. And I like myself most of the time. Just as Romeette closed her journal, the alarm clock sliced the silence. It was 6 a.m., and time to get up for school. All of a sudden, she was really sleepy, and sorry she had missed 2 hours of sleep. She sighed, glanced at her pillow, put the journal away under her mattress, and headed to the bathroom for a shower. Chapter 3. Early Morning. It was the first day back after Christmas vacation. The weather was cold, high about 20, the weatherman said, and snow was predicted. Romeette hoped it would snow all day and all night, enough to call school off for tomorrow. Not likely, she thought, but even after a 2-week break, the prospect of an unexpected free day looked great. Romy wore her new pale yellow sweats and shoes, and knew she looked good. She was a little sleepy, but she had grabbed a cup of coffee and a donut on the way to school, which she figured would get her through the day. She entered the front hall, still sipping the last of her coffee. Kids were crowded into the hall, trying to escape the cold, waiting for the bell to ring. Everyone was laughing and joking, comparing new shoes that had been Christmas presents, and talking about the parties and the big basketball game from last week. Romeette had known many of these kids since kindergarten, and she felt comfortable and accepted in the crowd. Destiny, Romy's best friend, dressed in bright pink sweats. They had planned their outfits last night on the phone. Her hair, newly braided, yelled all the way across the hall. "Hey, Romy! Girls in the house!" "Hey, Destiny. What's my scope for the day?" Destiny did everyone's horoscope and sun signs. She really believed that the stars control the lives of everyone, and she did nothing without consulting one of the many books she carried for reference. Some of the girls asked Destiny to do a chart for a boy they liked, and even though half of them didn't really believe it all, it was fun, and it was better than just guessing what he might be like.
"Looks good for you, girlfriend. New man coming into your life, but you won't know it for a while."
"Well, I guess I better get rid of the old one first. Marcus, you're out of my life, as of this morning. Destiny has spoken."
"I wish I had known I was your man. I would have taken advantage of it, for sure."
"Yeah, I bet you would have tried. See, that's why I never told you."
"My heart is broke to pieces. I guess I'm gonna have to keep my girl Ebony here."
"You the one, girl."
Marcus bowed with fake respect.
You better watch it, Marcus. Playing games right in front of my face.
Ebony complained.
Aw, you know I was just teasing. You my sweet little ebony treat. I could just pick you up and sling you to those stars that Destiny be talking about all the time.
Put me down, Marcus.
She screamed like she was about to die. But she was laughing, and everyone knew she loved the attention. Destiny and Romeette laughed. They'd both known Marcus and Ebony since fifth grade. They got ready to head to their lockers then, planning to meet again at lunch. Both girls were juniors, but they had very few classes together, only English with Miss Barry. It was a big school, with about 500 in each class, so they felt lucky to have lockers close together and one class to share.
I got something to tell you, Destiny, Romy confided. What's up, girl?
Destiny was instantly interested.
I've been having this dream. The same dream every night?
Yeah, almost, admitted Romy.
Ooh, I love it. Dreams aren't my specialty, but I got this book.
I knew you would.
What's it about? Trains? That means you're gonna travel. Bridges mean you have a decision to make. And bears mean, well, that means you're scared of bears,
Destiny declared. No, this one is really scary, Romy said quietly.
Tell me.
In the dream, I'm drowning, Romy began. In deep water, like almost dying. It's terrible, and I'm almost afraid to go to sleep.
Anything else?
Destiny's eyes were intent.
Yeah, the water is so cold, it's hot. That doesn't make sense.
Dreams aren't supposed to make sense, and I'm choking and almost dead. Then there's this voice. It was getting difficult for Romy to tell her friend all of this. It was hard enough to experience, but to say it out loud made it more real and much more frightening.
Whose voice? Mine?
No, it's a male voice. A voice I've never heard before. Not my dad's. Not any dude from around here.
I like it. Does he save you?
Destiny was intrigued now.
I don't know. I always wake up just as I hear his voice. Is it true that if you dream you die, then you wake up dead?
Romy asked quietly.
You mean that you really will die? I've heard that, but nobody who ever died got to come back and tell. Tell me more.
Romy sighed. I wish I could. That's all I know. But I'm not sleeping very well, and I'm getting scared.
Well, didn't your horoscope say a new man was coming into your life? Maybe you're hearing his voice.
Destiny was trying to be helpful. I don't know, but something's got to give soon. I don't like this, admitted Romy. Just then, the bell rang for first period, and somebody yelled,
Fight! Fight! Two dudes is going at it!
Dozens of kids rushed to the side of the front hall near the door. Romeette sighed and looked at Destiny. They gave each other a bored shrug and declared at the same time, Boys. Romeette never even glanced toward the crowd that surrounded a kid with green hair and a new boy that nobody had seen before. Chapter 4 Julio. He was tall, he was strong, he was angry, and he wasn't afraid to fight. Julio strode down the streets of Cincinnati on that January day, coat collar not doing much to cover his ears from the 20-degree winds, boots unlaced, fists thrust into his pockets, numbed from the cold. The only thing that kept him warm was his anger. anger at his parents for bringing him to this cold, gray city. Anger at the sky for being harsh and uncaring. Anger at himself for being scared and shivering in this ugly place. If somebody, anybody, had spoken to him then, he might have lashed out to release his fury. He wanted to destroy a wall or the sky. But the sidewalk was empty that January morning. Everyone with sense was on a bus or in a car or inside a heated building. But the bus he thought he was supposed to take never arrived, so after 30 minutes of freezing in the winter wind, he started walking. The school was 3 or 4 miles down the road, he figured, so using his anger as a cloak, he headed down the street to a school he had never seen, in a city he had just moved to enroll for classes in the second semester of the 11th grade. Julio had just moved from Corpus Christi, Texas. He hated Cincinnati with a passion. To Julio, it was cold and dreary, and everything seemed to be gray. There was dirty snow all over the dirty sidewalks. Everything seems tight and enclosed, like nobody breathes here, he thought. I want to throw paint everywhere out my window and color this place up. They expect me to live here? Do these people ever have any fun? Not likely. I bet you can't even get a good enchilada here. As he walked, his toes losing their feeling inside his boots, he glanced at the few barren black trees that lined the street. Mostly he saw fast food places and liquor stores next to storefront churches. Piles of trash to be collected. Recycling bins with beer bottles and unread newspapers. A few pigeons. His mood grew darker. There are no big sweeping magnolia trees, thought Julio. Only runty little maple trees with cold skinny branches, no leaves, all naked and stupid looking. The river here is dirty and dull, not like the beautiful Nueces River, where I learned to swim and sail and fish. Papa said something about going fishing on the Ohio River in the spring. Not me. Probably just catch some old beer cans. No fish with any sense would live in that nasty water. He had seen the Ohio River as he and his family flew in over the city. It was brown and thick and looked more like oozing mud to Julio than refreshing water. He could not imagine why anyone would want to swim in such filth. Julio loved to swim. He probably learned to swim before he could walk. Water was like his second skin, soothing and relaxing after a hot day in Texas. He was on a swim team once, and the coach tried to get him to think about training for the Olympics, but he figured it would take the fun out of swimming. He also liked to sail with his uncle on his boat. He was a good sailor and had been planning to buy a little sailboat of his own next year. Sailboat races were held every Wednesday, and last year Julio had won in the junior division. Kids in Corpus Christi get boats instead of cars when they turn 16. Thinking about home made his anger return. Right there on the Gulf of Mexico, swimming and boating were second nature to him. But all that was gone. Nothing remained but cold and bitterness. No soft, warm ocean air. No soft Hispanic flavor here. Just about everybody in Corpus Christi spoke English and Spanish fluently. Most of the people there had relatives in Mexico, across the Rio Grande. The music on the radio, the conversations on the bus, even the breezes that blew there had Spanish melodies floating from them. Here, everything was different. Julio muttered to himself, may as well have No Habla Español posted in large gray, of course, letters on every dull brown building here. He had called his friend Diego the night before. Diego had just come in from playing soccer. It was 71 degrees back home in Texas. Julio gritted his teeth. Hey, Diego, mi amigo, ¿qué pasa? What's up? Julio could almost feel the Texas breeze over the phone. He sighed.
De nada, Julio. How's Cincinnati?
Diego was slurping on a popsicle.
Ain't no fun here anymore since you left, ma.
I hate it here, ma. Just 'cause my dad lost his job, I gotta move a million miles from my home so he can start over. It's just not fair. Diego had heard Julio complain about this many times. Lots of kids had parents who were suddenly out of work. Several factories had moved out of town, and places like the insurance company that Julio's dad worked for had to cut back because folks just couldn't make the payments. Diego's dad had been out of work for 5 years.
Stuff is rough, ma.
I hear you. Suddenly, Julio thought about how rough life was for Diego, and he was sorry he had complained so loudly. Diego had 6 sisters, lived in a small apartment, and his mom watched 3-year-olds to make ends meet. There was never any place to sit or have a moment of silence. That's how they had become friends. Julio's house was cool and quiet. Diego used to come just to breathe in some silence, he always said. Julio, on the other hand, loved to go to Diego's place because 2 of his sisters were really fine. Diego didn't think so, but Julio liked to hang around just to see them brush their hair or laugh on the phone. He even took Maria to the movies once or twice. How are your sisters? Julio asked then.
Angelina is getting married next year. They got engaged at Christmas time. I still have 5 left here, though. I never get in the bathroom. That's why I hate you moved, Julio. You had such a nice bathroom.
Glad you appreciate the finer things of life, ma. Julio grinned.
What's it like there? Is it like Corpus Christi? Asked Diego.
Not even close. Bunch of taco fast food stores? That's about it. And that stuff all tastes like cardboard. And a bunch of ugly buildings that all look like cardboard.
Julio sighed again, remembering how homesick he was.
Do the gray buildings there in Ohio have gang stuff scribbled all over them like here?
Diego knew the other reason that Julio's family moved to Cincinnati was because of the crime and the gangs at their school in Texas. Gang members in their colors roamed the halls, threatening kids and roughing up anybody who opposed them. Fights between the 2 rival gangs broke out every day.
Who cares? Gangs are gonna be everywhere, Diego.
It's getting worse, ma. During Christmas break, they spray-painted graffiti all over the walls. Even in the classrooms. The teachers and principal can't seem to stop them.
I'm not surprised.
You know, even if the graffiti is cleaned off and painted away, by next week, it'll probably be back.
Now you're gone, Julio? I'm one of the few who still ain't in no gang. It's hard being out here by myself. I can't ride a school bus or eat lunch in the cafeteria.
Julio and Diego were talking about the unspoken law. They had to eat lunch every day on the steps, try not to act scared, walk home the long way. Either you were in a gang, or you were nobody. It was hard to concentrate on schoolwork with fights in the hall every day and bullies in colors pushing everyone around.
Yeah, I feel you, Diego.
I guess I'm glad I got out of there.
But why Ohio?
The Montague family has lived in Texas for 200 years.
I'm gonna miss those barbecues and weddings at your grandpa's ranch with all your uncles and their wives and kids.
Your grandpa is a trip. Doesn't he get married every 5 years?
Julio laughed. Mama says grandpa's a rascal. Papa says he's just trying to recapture his youth. Grandpa told me that after his first wife died, he was brokenhearted. He says he's trying to find a woman who can keep up with him. I really miss him already. Just before we left, he told me to keep the river in my heart and follow it.
Old people say strange things sometimes. You met any girls yet, Julio?
I've seen little kids and old people. Not even any ugly girls.
I hate this place.
Did I say that already?
Sí, ma. What about school?
Don't know. I start tomorrow, but I'm not expecting much. Hey, my mama's calling me. Good to talk to a familiar voice, ma.
Hang in there, Julio. Maybe something good will come out of all this.
I ain't gonna hold my breath waiting. Later. Julio could see the school about a block ahead. It was as he expected, tall, brown, and ugly. Schools in Texas were sprawled out over several buildings with walkways and arches and cool breezes. Lunch was always outside, and an air of freedom blew through the whole place. How will I ever find my way through that giant jail? Julio wondered bitterly. He walked up to the front of it and tried not to stare. It must have been 5 stories tall, of heavy brown brick, built to withstand tornadoes and snowstorms. Just looking at the unblinking face of that school made Julio remember how angry he was. He just frowned and walked up the icy front steps to the huge front doors. The school was dark inside. It even smelled damp and depressing. Julio thought, I will never feel right here. Kids were gathering in small groups in the front hall. Girls giggling, guys laughing too loud. It was January, the first day back after Christmas vacation, and everyone was excited to see their friends after 2 weeks away. No one noticed or spoke to Julio. One girl squealed shrilly as a boy picked her up and lifted her over his head. She yelled, "Put me down, Marcus!" But you could tell she was enjoying the attention. Julio stood near the door, watching the friends chatter about nothing and everything, and hating every moment of it. He clenched his fists and found himself breathing hard. He felt like he was about to explode.
Hey, man, get out of the way!
A tall, freckled boy wearing 2 safety pins as earrings, a small gold nose ring, and bright green hair, green like the color of a fluorescent marker, fell through the door where Julio had been standing and knocked Julio sprawling to the floor. He jumped up and spun around in 1 swift movement, took his right fist out of his pocket, and all of his anger and frustration exploded in the center of the green-haired boy's face. Bright red blood spurted from his nose, making him look somehow like a leftover Christmas decoration.
"Fight! Fight!"
somebody yelled, and instantly a crowd surrounded the 2 boys. Kids started jostling and pushing, cramming in to see the fight, shoving each other and getting louder in the hot, crowded hallway. The bell rang then, and the principal, large, balding, and red-faced, pushed his way through the crowd, which somehow disappeared in seconds.
"What's going on here?"
he demanded.
"Who started this? 5 minutes back in school and you're already fighting? I'm not going to start the new year off with this kind of mess. Both of you in my office right now."
He was sweating heavily and breathing hard. Ben, the one with the green hair, who was now sitting on the floor holding his nose with 1 hand and his nose ring in the other,
had no desire to take on an angry stranger. And Julio was no longer so angry. Too bad this strange, skinny kid got in the way of months of frustration. They looked at each other, then looked at the sweating, red-faced principal and almost grinned. Ben spoke first.
Mr. Prince, nobody's fighting. This dude here was just trying to help me up. I was running, and I slipped on the ice on the front steps and hit my nose on the door. I was thinking of calling my lawyer, or maybe America's Most Wanted, or maybe the president. I think you ought to get some salt on that slippery spot, Mr. Prince. Now, if you should fall, sir, we might have an earthquake or something, and we wouldn't want that to happen, because that would interrupt our educational success. And since I always wondered how much pressure a nose would have to put on a door to make it bleed, I feel that I have learned something this early morning, even before class starts.
The principal just shook his head and said,
"Shut up, Ben. It's too early in the morning for your babbling."
He turned to Julio, who was amazed and trying not to laugh at Ben, who so glibly got him out of trouble.
"Young man, is that what happened? Did he slip and fall?"
Julio looked at Ben, who was grinning in spite of a very swollen nose, and replied,
"I'm new here, Mr. Prince. Why would I hit someone I don't know? Today is my first day, and I came to enroll. Here are my transcripts from Texas."
Mr. Prince didn't believe either of them, but he had morning announcements to make, a sick teacher's class to cover, and a call to make to the custodian to get some salt on the front steps. So since the danger seemed to be over, he let it go.
"Take your stuff to the secretary in room 102, he told Julio. "And Ben, get to class."
He weighed at least 300 pounds, and he waddled as he headed down the hall. Ben watched him, put his book bag under his coat, and pretended to huff and sweat and roll. He burst into laughter as soon as Mr. Prince was out of earshot. Julio echoed his laughter. It felt good to laugh. It was almost as satisfying as that right hook into Ben's nose.
"Why'd you help me?" Julio asked, laughing again. "Why didn't you narc on me? I punched your lights out."
"Well, fortunately, I had a spare set of bulbs, and I could see you had some issues that had nothing to do with me. Am I right?"
"Yeah, meh. I just got here, and nothing was going right, and I want to be back home in Texas. And then some kid with green hair knocks me down."
"Hey, tomorrow it will be blue. I like being original.
If you ever see me looking ordinary, you got permission to punch me out again. I gotta get a class.
What's your name, dude? I gotta know who redecorated my face."
"Julio. I'm Julio Montague."
"I'm Ben. Ben Olson. Later, dude."
"Later. And thanks."
Julio thought about the incident with Ben as he waited for the secretary with the blue eyeliner to check his papers and give him a class schedule.
"I could be getting kicked out of school instead of checking in," he thought. "If it had been me getting punched by a crazy stranger, I would have clocked him, not helped him. Amazing dude, that Ben."
Julio got his schedule, sighed, and headed to the fourth floor for his math class. The halls were mostly empty by now, with crumpled paper and candy wrappers littering the floor. He could hear Mr. Prince's monotone voice making the morning announcements, stuff about SAT registration forms and tardy slips and the basketball game tomorrow night. None of it had any meaning for him as he checked all the closed doors in that long, dark hallway, but couldn't find room 407. He saw 405, 406, then the numbers jumped to 412 and 413. "Why do schools do this stuff to kids?" he thought in frustration.
"Yo, Chico, you lost?"
The voice came from the end of the hall.
Yeah, ma. And my name's not Chico.
You look like a Chico to me. Room 407 is around the corner in the new wing, Chico.
Julio walked toward him, his anger returning. But the boy disappeared into a classroom. All Julio saw was that he had on purple sweats. Julio was frowning when he walked into 407. That Chico comment made him tense and irritated. Anglos at home used that name as a put-down. And at home, it was mostly the Anglo gang members who used it. This was not a good sign. The math teacher, a tall, skinny man with a really cheap hairpiece that slid whenever he moved his head and did not match his graying hair, looked at Julio and smiled.
Welcome, Julio. You can take that seat behind Brandy. Are you a good math student, or will you fit right in with my friends sitting here who think math was invented by a beady-eyed monsters?
Julio grinned.
You mean it wasn't?
He said with mock surprise. The teacher, Mr. Whitehead, rolled his eyes and smiled again.
Yep, you're going to fit right in here. Here's a textbook. We're on page 155.
Most of the kids ignored Julio. A few of the girls looked him over with interest, but nobody spoke or even smiled. They seemed to pay more attention to the fresh snow that was falling than to the discussion on polynomials. Large, flat flakes floated slowly at first, then thick like falling cloud bits, covering the dirt and grayness of the city. Julio watched also, admiring the beauty of the fallen snow, and wishing it could cover all the darkness and fear he felt inside as well. Chapter 5. Destiny and the Scientific Soulmate System. Destiny ran up the stairs to Romeo's room and barged in without knocking. Romeo was used to it. Now that Destiny was driving, she dropped over whenever she felt like it, which was usually once a day and three or four times on the weekend. Destiny's car was bright red, with dozens of brightly colored butterfly decals on it. Instead of looking tacky, though, it looked just perfect for her. She liked the music loud, the convertible top down, even in the coldest weather, just in case the right man was looking her way, and a huge bumper sticker that read, "Practice random acts of kindness and senseless acts of beauty."
Romeo! Romeo, just check this out, girl. This is the bomb. Can you lend me $45? I've got the answer to your dream problems and my man problems, too.
$45? You got me bent. What do you need that much money for, Destiny? And how is it going to solve all our problems?
I got enough for the shipping and handling. I can't believe you don't know. Check out page 54.
Now, if I didn't know you so well, I'd ask page 54 of what? But where's the magazine? Is it Heavy Hunks or Teen Scene? The teen magazine industry would go out of business if Destiny Louise Dotson canceled all her subscriptions.
Don't talk so loud. I would die if anyone else knew my middle name. How could parents who were cool enough to give me a dynamite name like Destiny give me such a stupid middle name?
I thought it was the name of the aunt you like who's the astrologer in California.
I'm getting my middle name changed when I'm 21 to something like Sagittarius or Karma.
You're a trip, Destiny. Romy laughed and reached for the magazine.
So, what's so special in Heavy Hunks this month? You know I just read Heavy Hunks for inspiration.
Destiny rolled her eyes.
How am I gonna find me the perfect man if I don't know what's out there?
Yeah, like we know anybody who looks like the dudes in that magazine. They all got big shoulders, hazel eyes, tight butts, and look like they're about to pop out of those tight turquoise bikini bottoms they dress them in. They all go to Yale, are majoring in medicine, and plan to dedicate the millions they're gonna make to the poor.
So what's wrong with that?
Destiny asked with a grin. You ever seen one real dude that looks even close to one of them? Retorted Romy.
Well, no, but that's why I look so hard. When I see him, I'll know. I will see his tight turquoise butt in the distance on the beach.
We live in Ohio. Which beach would that be?
Quit stepping on my dream. He will know, too. He'll be my soulmate. He will see my slim, supple body, my long, flowing hair, my perfect white teeth.
He must have forgotten his glasses then.
Now just stop.
When I find him, you'll take back all your jokes.
My soulmate is out there. I know it. He's searching for me, too.
Reality calling Destiny. He's not there yet. What did you find in the magazine that you need $45 for?
Oh, I almost forgot what I wanted to show you. It's called the Scientific Soulmate System. It's just perfect.
You gotta be kidding, Romy said with a grin.
No, for real. You know you believe in soulmates. You just think you're gonna find yours when you're 25. I can't wait that long. I need a date for the prom by June. I gotta find him now. There's nothing that says I can't speed up the process. Check this out. Here's the ad. It's even got my name in it.
The Scientific Soulmate System.
Do you feel the soul of another calling to you? Do you know in your heart that your destiny and his were meant to merge in the cosmos? We can help you find him. The Scientific Soulmate System has been designed to help you find that special someone. The kit includes everything you need. Number 1. The Dream Wish Candle. Specially scented with the aroma of raspberries, known to enhance dream images. Simply light the candle before you go to sleep, and let the gentle smell of raspberries lead you to the dream of that special someone. Candles are shipped in a sturdy globe for maximum safety. 2. The Dream Ointment. Rub just a dab on each temple each evening. Feel the tingle of the peppermint-based salve as it penetrates your consciousness and helps to visualize the dream image. 3. The Dream Tape. Selected instrumental music with rhythms that match the human heartbeat. Play this softly near you as you sleep. The dream of your soulmate is only a heartbeat away. 4. The Dream Journal. Keep this near your bed so that when you awaken in the morning, you can capture the dream images before they disappear. Special dream pen included at no extra cost? This $75 value can be yours for only $44.99, plus $9.99 for shipping and handling. Rush your order today.
Romeette, I have got to get this, cried Destiny. Besides, maybe they will give you some answers to that dream you've been having. Maybe you'll get a face to go with that voice.
Destiny, you are nuts. You don't really believe this, do you?
Look, Romeette, if you lend me the money, you can come over and spend the night, and we'll try it together. It can't hurt. It doesn't work as well if you don't truly believe, though. I'll pay you back next week when my dad gets back from his trip.
Okay, let's try it. You know I just got paid.
And you got money left over. Girl, it was meant to be. Here's the address. Let's go down to the post office and get our money order. I want to mail this today.
Who knows? You may find your soulmate, too.
Maybe that voice you hear is your soulmate calling out to you.
I don't need a soulmate yet. I have trouble enough dealing with just me and keeping up with you.
But just suppose...
Yeah, suppose I dream about your soulmate. How are we supposed to know?
Gotta read the fine print on the instructions. We'll figure it out. Let's get going. Post office closes in an hour.
I'm with you, girl, but I don't know why. Romy grabbed her purse, and the two headed out to Destiny's car. Chapter 6. Julio at home. Julio sloshed through the wet and melting snow, up the unshoveled walkway of their apartment building. It wasn't luxurious, nor was it raggedy. It was just so very ordinary.
Generic, thought Julio, just like any other apartment complex in the United States.
He opened the door to the first floor hallway, and the warm smell assaulted him. It wasn't an unpleasant odor. It was simply the shared smell of many people living under one roof. Combined smells of food and fights and joy and tears. Julio felt alone in that symphony of odors. He wanted the familiar fragrances of his home in Texas. Luis Montague, his dad, was trying to clear all the boxes from the living room. He smiled as Julio walked into the room. He was proud of his tall, brooding son and understood his pain.
So, how was your first day at the new school, son?
I hate it.
How can you know? You just got here.
Here, help me move these boxes. I hate the snow. I hate the city. I hate the kids here. I want to go back home.
This is our home now, Julio.
Sí, Papa, but I don't have to like it.
Did you try to make friends today?
A smile, perhaps?
Papa, nobody in the 11th grade smiles. I know. Terminal depression for a year. It will pass, my son.
Give it time.
It's difficult for me and your mother as well.
Not like for me. You got each other. I got nothing. And there's nothing Spanish here in Cincinnati.
We haven't yet had the chance to investigate all the possibilities. We may be pleasantly surprised. There's the phone. Can you get that? My hands are full.
Yeah, sure, Papa.
Hello?
May I speak to Julio Montague?
You got him.
This is Ben, the kid with the green hair and the red nose.
Hey, Ben, how'd you get my number?
I got friends in high places, like my sister who works in the office.
You know, I sort of looked for you today, but I didn't see any green hair all day, Julio admitted.
I slipped out early. I used a broken nose as an excuse, but I had to go play in the snow. I need to sled on virgin snow. After school, all the little kids with runny noses will have tramped all over it. I had the whole afternoon on a clean slope of untouched snow. Awesome!
Sounds okay, I guess, if you like snow.
You don't like snow? Ben asked incredulously.
Nah, not much. We never got a much snow in Corpus Christi. Too wet, too messy, too cold. Gets in my shoes and under my shirt.
But have you ever sledded on virgin snow? Teased Ben.
I can't say that I have.
Okay, next snowfall, I'll take you and show you the glory of initiating a perfect hill on a cold, clear afternoon. What you doing tonight?
I don't know. Chilling, I guess.
It's going down to 5 below tonight. You'll be chilling, all right.
He never gets this cold in Corpus Christi. My friends at home are out on the river with their sailboats.
Awesome. You got a boat?
Not of my own, but I can use my uncle's anytime I want. I'm a good sailor. Maybe as good as you are on a sled. You ever been sailing? Julio asked.
No, not really. The only boat I've been on is one of those tour boats on the river.
Well, if it ever warms up around here and that dirty thing you call a river downtown ever melts, I'll take you on a virgin sailing trip.
Sounds good to me. I like virgin anything.
Ben chuckled.
So, what's it like in Corpus Christi?
It's, well, different. Different colors, landscape, feels, smells. It's hard to explain.
I feel you. It's like me and my hair. Different. What kind of name is Montague anyway? You Spanish or Greek or what?
My family is from Mexico, but Montague is an Italian name. Some Italian count hundreds of years ago, who was running away from trouble with some king, ended up in Mexico, got married there, and it has been our family name ever since.
That's deep. That you can trace your family back that far.
My dad passes through from time to time, so it's just me and my mom and my sister and my jars of hair dye, which I do not let my sister use. Mom lets me do what I need to. She's really cool, but I'd never tell her, Ben admitted. My parents are great,